Bhagavatah.
Devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nityam, eternally. Bhuta anugraha kataraha.
Very much anxious to bestow benedictions
upon the fallen conditioned souls.
Rite,
accept.
Twam,
yourself.
Sauradam,
a breaker of friendship. Therefore not countable among the Bhagavatas or devotees of the Lord.
Vai,
indeed.
Vairam
karam, you create enmity.
Avairanam,
toward persons who are not enemies. So translation, all the devotees of the Lord but you are very kind to the conditioned souls and are eager to benefit others. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, you create enmity with people who are not your enemies, or you break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee while performing these abominable actions? So you can repeat. All the devotees of the Lord. But you are very kind. To the conditioned souls. And are eager to benefit others.
Although you wear the dress of a devotee.
You create enmity with people.
Who are not your enemies.
Or you break friendships.
And create enmity between friends.
Are you not ashamed
of posing as a devotee
while performing these abominable actions?
The purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Vijaya.
Such are the criticisms that must be borne by the servants of Narada Muni in the disciplic succession. Through the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we are trying to train young people to become devotees and return home back to Godhead by following rigid regulative principles. But our service is appreciated neither in India nor abroad in the Western countries, where we are endeavoring to spread this Krishna Consciousness Movement. In India, the caste Brahmanas have become enemies of the Krishna Consciousness Movement because we elevate foreigners who are supposed to be malechas and yavanas to the position of Brahmins. We train them in austerities and penances and recognize them as Brahmanas by awarding them sacred threads. Thus, the caste Brahmanas of India are very displeased by our activities in the Western world. In the West also, the parents of the young people who join this movement have also become enemies. We have no business creating enemies, but the process is such that non-devotees will always be inimical toward us. Nevertheless, as stated in the Shastras, a devotee should be both tolerant and merciful. Devotees engaged in preaching should be prepared to be accused by ignorant persons, and yet they must be very merciful to the fallen conditioned souls. If one can execute his duty in the disciplic succession of Narada Muni, his service will surely be recognized. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, texts
68-69.
For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed, and bien, he will come back to me. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Let us continue preaching the message of Lord Krishna and not be afraid of enemies. Our only duty is to satisfy the Lord by this preaching, which will be accepted as service by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. We must sincerely serve the Lord and not be deterred by so-called enemies. In this verse, the word Sauradag Nam, a breaker of friendship, is used because Narada Muni and the members of his disciplic succession disrupt friendships and family life. They are sometimes accused of being Sauradag Nam, creators of enmity between relatives. Actually, such devotees are friends of every living entity, Sauradag Sarvabhutanam, but they are misunderstood to be enemies. Preaching can be a difficult, thankless task, but a preacher must follow the orders of the Supreme Lord and be unafraid of materialistic persons. Nanu bhagavata nityam bhutanugraha kataraha vitetvam suvidagnam vai vairankaram avairinam. So... Om Ganat Madanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yenatasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, of course, we find in Lord Kapiladev's descriptions, Atadikshava Kurunika Surada Sarvadehinam Jata Shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhavushana, the ornaments of a Vaishnava. And of course, very quickly there, Tatikshika Kurunika, he's merciful to all living entities, he's tolerant of all different circumstances, Surada Sarvadehinam, he's a friend to all living entities. Anyway, so these are some of the qualities or ornaments. Sadhubhushana means like ornament, Bhushana means ornament of a Vaishnava. So why is it that people consider Vaishnavas to be their enemies? And also, how common is it? If we look at the history of religions, and we're not just talking about Vaishnavism, or Vaishnavism in terms of the Indian context, but let's say Vaishnavism in terms of a greater context, or every religion, every bona fide religion, you'll see this dynamic occurring, which is really interesting. I mean, if you look at the Muslim religion, the Jewish religion, or Vaishnavism, or, you know, basically any bona fide religion. So let's go down the line. Let's take the Muslim religion, the Islamic tradition. You had Muhammad, who believed in one God, Ekala Isra Allah, as they say in Bengali. There's one Isra, his name is Allah. Actually, that's what they chant, isn't it? There's one God, Allah's name, and Muhammad is his prophet. Anyway, so he ran into so much problems in Mecca because they were also like these ritualistic Brahmins. I don't really want to say they're Brahmins, but they were ritualistic people who were worshiping, there's something like 360 different idols or statues or deities, whatever you may call it, in this Kaaba. And Mecca was like the center of trade. And so they would have all these nice big festivals in honor of these different, I don't want to say deities, but different personalities who they thought they were worshiping. And there were many ritualistic people there. And basically, they were making money. Because we're getting down to the motivation right now. So they were making money because obviously if you have festivals, I mean, just like sometimes, actually it's interesting. In North America, the North American GBC was talking about how to raise money. So we need money for legal affairs or this and that. So the idea is let's hold a festival to make money. So you see money is also motivation sometimes, a big motivation. Or, you know, even during Janmashtami, you pay the deities and you pay $500 to pay the deities. Not saying it's wrong. I mean, but we shouldn't be so much caught up in this pecuniary, you know, financial greed that we actually forget the purpose of life. So anyway, so that was Mecca. And so Muhammad was basically driven out of town, even though he had no intention of creating enmity with people, but he was driven out of town because he was interfering with business. That's basically the point. Like the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. Anyway, so Muhammad was driven out of town, then he went to his other city, Medina, and gradually he had to get his forces together and attack. Well, actually, He walked into Mecca because later on he defeated the Meccan forces somewhere else. He didn't actually fight them in Mecca. So, but later on he was able to take over Mecca because basically he was forced to take up arms and fight. So you see the motive of these ritualistic people. I'm just trying to point out this common denominator, that generally the motive of ritualistic people is financial. You know, because that's the way they make a living. Just like you go to India, and there's these pandas there, and especially Radhakund. You know, I had my friends who were pandas, and they love me because I bring groups there. You know, I said, Maharaj, don't. You know, I come up and they embrace me, even though I'm a Malecha. You know, what doesn't matter what I am, because I'm bringing groups of people there. Oh, Maharaj, don't forget me. Please come and see me. Visit my home. Bring all your friends. And so, you know, by the time. And when we go to Radhakund, they actually are looking, like whether they have binoculars or not, I'm not sure. But they see when we enter Radhakund and they follow us all around till we get to the last portion where you're supposed to do the whole ceremony, where you offer these little lamps. And then they do the whole set. So I'm caught up. You know, what can I do? They don't get me because I'm their friend. But whenever I take a group around, I have to allow the group to get the ceremony. And then there's several of them that are friendly with me. So I just have to say, well, we're friends with so and so. So please, you know, he's doing our ceremony for us today. So we don't get harassed by all of them, which is interesting. Anyway. And so they do this whole ceremony, offering lamps and everything like that, and I'm sitting just chanting somewhere else while they're doing that. So, because in Kali Yuga, somehow or other, you know, the stress is on Vaishyas and Shudras, mostly Shudras, of course. Kalo Shudras Sambhava is described in the Vedic literatures. So getting back to it. So Mohammed, that's a perfect example of how the so-called vices, or money people, or people interested in money, became his enemies. And later on, of course, they had to surrender because he had more force. So they used the argumentum ad baculum on the money people. And then you take Jesus Christ, for example. I mean, why did he have so many enemies? Why was he crucified? Basically, because he interfered with business. Because you had the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and they're like the priestly class. This is relating to what Prabhupada said about the ritualistic Brahmins. So they're like the priestly class. And, you know, what did Jesus Christ do when he walked into the temple? He overturned the tables of the money changers. And, you know, they were selling lambs for sacrifice in the main temple in Jerusalem. Can you imagine that? Right outside the temple, there was a whole marketplace for little baby lambs. Can you imagine that? Of course, we're fortunate, you know, outside of the temples in Vrindavan, there's no lambs being sacrificed. However, you can buy garlands and things like that, isn't it? I mean, there's a whole marketplace. Wherever you set up a temple, then you'll find a marketplace set up in India immediately within about a week. With all these like shacks and stores, and they're selling beads and they're selling this and selling that. So you can see financial incentives are actually a big thing in Kali Yuga. So anyway, so Jesus Christ, he interfered with the business going on. That's basically it. And it wasn't that the Romans really wanted to kill him, but it was the priests that wanted to kill him. You know, the Romans were ready to forgive him. They had this other... they said, well, this is... Was it Passover or something like that? And so, we'll forgive one of the prisoners. What was the name of the other prisoner? Barabbas, yeah. Who was like a murderer, you know, low class, you know, Malecha. Of course, they were all Malechas, but anyway. And they said, we'll forgive one of them. You know, you got a choice, Jesus Christ or Barabbas. And everyone said, well, forgive Barabbas. And because the priest had actually riled people up so much against Jesus Christ I mean, of course, they said they were upset because he was calling himself the Messiah or the Son of God or whatever. But actually, they were upset because he interfered with business. Because if you can really analyze people's motivation, and usually it has something to do with finances. Finances or profit adoration distinction or something like that. Even when you have people who are, let's say Ritvix or something like that, people who are against, like, gurus in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they have a philosophical veneer, but there's some psychological, emotional issues behind the philosophical veneer. Does everyone understand that? Like, a veneer means like a thin covering. There's a thin covering of philosophy. Like, I see, like, there was one of Vridananda Maharaj's disciples who was basically attacking him on the internet. I won't mention his name. And later on, of course, he took shelter of some other personality in his time. But you can see that there's a whole emotional aspect to it. It wasn't philosophical at all. Philosophy is used to sort of hide one's emotional issues in Kali Yuga, isn't it? That's quite interesting. You know, so you can't really, if you deal with the philosophy, you'll never make a conclusion. You have to deal with the emotions underneath the philosophy when you're arguing with someone. Not so much what you're saying, why you're saying it. You know, what, as they say in empathic communication, what need are you trying to fulfill? What issues do you have? Have you always felt like this? I mean, basically in Kali Yuga, because everyone is basically Shudra, psychologists are much more adept at reaching out to people than philosophers. people have so many psychological issues. We were talking to Tristan Guru about his work as a social worker. I mean, when you see the actual nature of people. And of course, even as a guru, you know, I deal with this all the time, with people's psychology. You can't preach them out of their psychological issues. So anyway, so you have Jesus Christ also was attacked by people. People thought he was their enemy. And Jesus Christ, certainly, his philosophy was if someone hits you on one cheek, then you just turn the other cheek. I mean, he really was epitomizing, personifying Tatikshiva Kurunika Suradasa Vadainam. I mean, even he was saying to the people who were crucified, about the people who were crucifying him, he said, "Forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they do." So you really have that, you know, the highest, the pinnacle of compassion, yet still people hate him. Right? And, you know, Muhammad. And then, you know, Prabhupada too. And Prabhupada, we're not even just talking about ritualistic brahmanas with Srila Prabhupada. We're talking about his godbrothers. Seriously. I mean, they also had a philosophical veneer, you know, criticized, well, he likes to hang out with mulatas or likes to hang out with low-class people in the West. But basically, they were envious. You know, it was an emotional issue. And then Prabhupada actually said that. He said, basically, not all of them, I mean, he made some exceptions like Sridhar Maharaj, but basically he said, most of my godbrothers are envious of me. And even though Prabhupada was on, you know, the perfect spiritual Vaishnava platform, he had to go on the attack just to defend our movement and defend the devotees against the envious godbrothers. And the godbrothers, they didn't want Prabhupada to have a place in Mayapur. You know, Prabhupada had to send TKG, Kamal Krishna Maharaj, to get a place in Mayapur, but the godbrothers were trying to interfere with it all the time. And, you know, when they heard that Prabhupada was called, founder Acharya, or Prabhupada, I mean, they got extremely upset with it. Extremely upset. So even Prabhupada's preaching, there was enmity with his godbrothers. Isn't it? Not all of them. Not all of them. I mean, we don't want it. And, you know, of course, when Prabhupada was leaving the world, he said, now the war is over, or something like that. You know, now we can. But still, one has to be very, very cautious. I mean, Prabhupada, one one of Prabhupada's godbrothers actually reinitiated one of Prabhupada's disciples. His name was Rishikesh. And he was, and he kept this devotee from getting letters from Prabhupada. He acted so inimically that he said to this devotee that, you know, your spiritual master is really not interested in you. He's not writing you because he was blocking all the letters that were coming from Srila Prabhupada to this disciple. I mean, I actually even spoke to Rishikesh. I met with him. He was in Bangkok. So I actually stayed at his house and talked to him about these things. It was a very interesting discussion. And so Prabhupada, so you see this even with Prabhupada's godbrothers and Jesus Christ, you know, the Pandavas, how their cousin brothers were envious of them. And really, even Jesus Christ said, you know, had come basically to create enmity, he didn't use those words, you know, between different family members. Even there's some statement, I forget the exact, you know, I can paraphrase it, but I forget the exact, you know, so that's really what happens, because you're declaring war on the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, even Krishna, when he called the gopis, I mean, their husbands weren't too happy that that their wives are going out to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's interesting in that relationship between Krishna and the gopis. I mean, the gopis sacrificed everything externally in order to be with Krishna in the middle of the night. And then, what payment did they get for it? Krishna said, you know, I can't repay you. There's nothing I can give you, but you ought to be satisfied with your own devotion. You know, one really has to be detached. Can you imagine? So when two people getting married and the husband saying, you know, you'll just have to be satisfied with your own devotion. You know, I may disappear after, and you may have to worship me in separation. Can you imagine that? You know, the Krishna left Vrindavan when he was about 16 years old, and the gopis had only been with him for a short time. I mean, of course, there were night times of Lord Brahma. I understand day of Lord Brahma. And the rasa dance lasted for a long time. But then he leaves. And then the gopis, for the rest of their manifest presence, they're just experiencing this intense separation. And so they just have to be satisfied with their devotion. Of course, their separation is actually non-different in one sense from connection when they were with Krishna. In that mood, because when you're feeling intense separation, you're not disconnected from Krishna. However, that indicates to us what we can expect from devotional service. Now, that means we really have to be satisfied in order. Was that the bell? It's all over. So, in order to persevere in our Krishna consciousness, in spite of, you know, these people who don't like us, and, you know, you really can't be looking for, like, getting enjoyment from other people. We were talking about this yesterday. If you're looking for getting enjoyment from other people, you can't be merciful, because you're gonna be, it's gonna be a business exchange at that point. So really what you have to be, getting your, as they say, jollies from, getting your happiness from, is the relationship with Krishna, the internal relationship with Krishna. And you have to come to that stage. That's real detachment. You have to come to that stage, or else you'll get so disturbed by when people turn against you or people die. I mean, the nature of this world is such. You know, friends become enemies, enemies become friends. The body turns again. Even your body becomes your enemy. Isn't it? You know, speaking of Rina Nenmar, he's having these back problems right now. And yet, you know, we all have, as we get older, we have some physical issues that occur. At least, everybody I know has physical issues that occur. So even your body turns again. You serve your body your whole life. Can you imagine? Here's something you've been serving. Feeding it 3 or 4 times a day, putting it on a soft bed, What is that, space age foam bed? You know, form fitting space. Buying clothes for it. And can you imagine what we become? Body bhaktas. And then it turns on you at the end of life. So even the thing that's so dear to you, your body turns on you. What to speak of other people. So really you just have to be satisfied with this devotion in your heart, like the gopis. You have to be satisfied with the devotion and the happiness in the heart. You have to be internal and stuff like that. And in that way, we can deal with people who become envious or think that we are their enemies in a compassionate way. Because you're not trying to get something out of it. The reason you hate people or the reason other people hate you is because they're trying to get something from you. Or you're interfering with something that they're trying to get. One of the two things. You understand? That's the point. Friends and enemies, like Prahlad Maharaj's guru's teachers, Sanatana Marga, they were trying to teach him about friends and enemies. It's all based upon my enemy interferes with what I want, or he's competing with what I want, for what I want, and my friend is giving me what I want. That's where friends and enemies come from. So a devotee has to be a friend of everybody, even those who are his enemies, or think that they're his enemies, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, Ajata Shatru. And the only way to do that is to really get your happiness from within, and to see, because we were talking to someone yesterday about how at the workplace do you actually see everybody, you know, and have nice relationships with everybody, even though at the workplace, you know, if you're working in the let's say material world, of course they're also in the material world, then you're always going to have enemies in the workplace. You know, because there's always competition. Not always, but you know, generally there's competition. Like Prabhupada was talking to this person at Dynapon, and it was just ordinary person, salesman. And Prabhupada said, "What is your goal in life?" And then he took all these business cards and put his own business card on top. So, I mean, this is the nature of the world. There's competition. There's competition like that for resources. And so, if you have this internal relationship with Krishna, and you see other people as being temples of Krishna, in other words, Krishna's in their hearts, and you're actually relating with Krishna when you're talking to them, and they're your brothers and sisters. I was also explaining that these people are your brothers and sisters too, that they've forgotten, like even the animals, of course. You know, brother, this, sister, that. So, if one sees like that, then one will be able to be tolerant of other people being inimical and actually being able to love everybody. Because that's actually one of the goals that we have, according to Kapila Dev, is to be a well-wisher, Suhrida Sarvadehi Nam. To be a well-wisher of all living entities, and especially those who attack you. So one thing that I found very powerful is that sometimes you can pray for those who don't like you. As you're chanting, you can pray for their benefit. And Krishna becomes very pleased like that, because that means you're not trying to enjoy the relationship. I mean, generally, we try to enjoy different relationships, like the guru enjoys the relationship with the disciples, touching their feet, saying nice words, fanning them. Nowadays, of course, we have electric fans, more efficient than disciples. We really just have to take our enjoyment within, internal. So that's the secret. That's the secret for Vaishnava. And then expect the worst of this material world. Expect people not to like us. It's going to happen. So any questions or comments about these things? Yeah.
On a morning walk one time, one of Prabhupada's disciples, one of our godbrothers, started criticizing Prabhupada's godbrother, and Prabhupada stopped and said, I can criticize, you cannot.
Yeah, this is etiquette.
So the criticism really is one of those things that Prabhupada could do, because he was trying to show us
yeah.
what the difference between himself, but he didn't want to see us become critical of Vaishnava.
Yeah, that would be very bad. We became critical. That's true. Yeah, Prabhupada was trying to show us, or protect us, actually. That was Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada wasn't envious of them. And when we criticize others, many times we're envious of them. Or we consider them our enemies. Prabhupada never really considered his godbrothers as enemies. He just was thinking strategically how to protect these devotees. I mean, Prabhupada had no, inimical mood towards anybody. Whereas when we criticize people, we actually have an inimical mood, or an offensive mood towards people. But Prabhupada's mood was just, how can I protect my disciples, my fledgling disciples, my neophyte disciples from people that may disturb their faith? Of course, as one gets more mature, then one's faith won't get disturbed, even if they hear different opinions about things. But Prabhupada said, in the beginning, because people were so neophyte, that if you hear something different, it will cause confusion. But obviously, after about 30 or 40 years of the Krishna conscious movement, you can reconcile these things and develop more maturity. So any other questions or comments or problems? Yeah. Well, there's several ways. The best way is don't hear it. I mean, just close your ears, go away from the place. Do not advocate cutting tongues out. It's not one of the reasons I became a vegetarian is because I saw a tongue. Not that it was cut out by a devotee. It was cut by my mother. From a cow. Anyway, so better go away from the place. Don't put yourself in a circumstance. Change the subject matter. I mean, just like when I joined the Krishna conscious movement, I would preach very enthusiastically to my father, and he became a little critical at that point. And I just thought, well, let's change the subject matter. Let's talk about politics instead, Dad. I said, let's talk about Richard Nixon or whoever was in office. I don't remember at that time. But let's talk about politics, Republicans, Democrats, so you pick another subject matter, you change the subject. That's generally what I do. I change the subject matter because you can't, in certain circumstances, you can't just leave the situation because it may be a family member or something like that. So you talk about something and then they forget. People's span of attention in Kali Yuga is so small. You can actually, I discover this all the time when talking with people, people come to me and say, I have this problem, I have that problem. Instead of just dealing with the problem, I change the subject matter. And they forget. I know. I just change the subject matter. And then, wow, it's easy, I dealt with the subject.
Don't they come back again?
Yeah, but then they find someone else to complain to. There's different methods, but basically we shouldn't want to hear offenses, but we don't want to encourage people to make more offenses by challenging them. Because in Kali Yuga, what I find, especially on the internet, you can't defeat anybody, no matter how good your arguments are. It goes on forever and ever and ever because there's an emotional thing behind it. So unless you can deal with the emotions,